Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into a topic many of us encounter, hip arthritis. Maybe you're dealing with it, or you know someone is.
It's incredibly common, definitely.
Yeah. So our goal here is to really unpack it. You know, what causes it, what it feels like, and importantly, how it's generally handled.
Right. And we're basing our discussion today on information from orthoeducation.com.
That's right. It's a great resource, free, peer-reviewed information on muscle and bone conditions. But just a quick reminder for everyone listening, this is for educational purposes. It's not medical advice.
Absolutely. If you've got concerns about your own health, please see a healthcare professional.
Okay, let's dive in. Hip arthritis. It's more than just a simple ache, isn't it? It really
Yeah.
affects how people get around. Fundamentally, what goes wrong in the hip joint?
Well, basically, hip arthritis involves either inflammation or, more commonly, just wear and tear within the hip joint itself. And this leads to the loss of cartilage. That's the smooth, slippery tissue covering the ends of the bones in the joint, kind of like a protective cap.
Right, the cushioning. So when that starts to go.
Exactly. In a healthy hip, cartilage lets the bones glide smoothly, absorbs impact. But when arthritis damages or wears away that cartilage, friction increases, movement becomes harder.
And that's where the main symptoms come in.
That's it. You start getting that stiffness, pain, and a reduced range of motion. It just doesn't move like it used to.
Okay, so that's the general mechanism. But I know arthritis isn't just one single thing. Are there different types that typically affect the hip?
Yes, definitely. While several types exist, the two we see most often are osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis.
Right, osteoarthritis, OA. That's the one people usually mean when they talk about wear and tear arthritis, often linked with aging.
Precisely. Osteoarthritis is essentially that mechanical breakdown of the joint cartilage over time. It's like parts wearing out. And interestingly, sometimes it's related to how the hip was formed. Think of a car tire that's slightly misaligned.
Okay.
One side wears out faster because the pressure isn't even. A subtly misshapen hip joint can do the same thing, concentrate wear on one area of cartilage.
I get it. So small structural things can accelerate the wear.
They can. And of course, major trauma can also trigger it later on. Things like a bad fracture near the hip joint or a hip dislocation. That damage can set the stage for arthritis down the road.
Makes sense. Trauma changes the mechanics. Now, what about rheumatoid arthritis? That sounds different.
It's very different. Rheumatoid arthritis, or RA, isn't primarily mechanical, it's an autoimmune disease.
Autoimmune, meaning the body attacks itself.
Exactly. The body's immune system mistakenly targets the lining of the hip joint, the synovium. This causes inflammation, and eventually that inflammation damages the cartilage too.
So OA is wear and tear. RA is more like an internal attack on the joint.
That's a good way to put it. And there are other less common types too. Gout can affect the hip, septic arthritis, which is a joint infection,
Right.
psoriatic arthritis, pseudogout, reactive arthritis. Several others exist, but OA and RA are really the main players for hip arthritis.
Gotcha. So once someone has hip arthritis, say OA, does it just stay at one level or does it tend to get worse?
Generally, it's a progressive condition, meaning it tends to worsen over time, although the speed can vary a lot between people.
And how do doctors usually track that progression? How do they stage it?
We primarily use x-rays to assess the severity and stage. We look for specific changes in the joint structure.
Okay, what kinds of changes are visible on an X-ray?
The big one is joint space narrowing. Remember, cartilage doesn't show up well in x-rays, it looks like space. So as the cartilage wears away, that dark space between the ball and socket gets thinner.
I see. Less space means less cartilage.
Exactly. That narrowing is a key indicator of how advanced the arthritis is.
So what are the typical stages then? How does it progress from mild to severe?
We usually talk about three main stages. Early or mild arthritis shows just slight joint space narrowing. You might also see some sclerosis.
Sclerosis, what's that?
That's where the bone just underneath the cartilage starts to harden and get denser. It's like the bone reacting to the increased stress. Pain in this stage is often mild, maybe moderate.
Okay, so early signs of wear, what's next?
Then you get to the middle or moderate stage. Here, the joint space narrowing is more obvious. We might start seeing small cysts forming in the bone near the joint. We call them subchondral cysts.
Cysts in the bone.
Yeah, little fluid-filled pockets. Pain and stiffness can really vary here. It could be mild, could be quite severe. It's becoming more significant.
Right, and the final stage, end-stage arthritis.
Yes, late or end-stage or severe arthritis. This is where you see really significant, sometimes complete loss of the joint space. It's often called bone on bone.
Ouch.
Yeah. You'll also typically see larger cysts, more pronounced sclerosis, and often osteophytes. Those are bone spur.
Bone spurs, right. Oh. Little bony growths.
Exactly. Stiffness is usually pretty significant by this point. Interestingly, pain can still vary. Some people with severe x-ray changes have less pain than you'd expect. Others have severe pain. But function is usually quite limited.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, who is more likely to develop hip arthritis? Are there known risk factors?
Yes, several factors increase the risk. Obesity is a major. One extra weight just puts more stress on the hip joints day in, day out.
Sure, simple physics.
Advanced age is another big one, just the cumulative effect of wear over decades. Also, certain developmental conditions like hip dysplasia, where the joint didn't form quite right.
From birth?
Yes, exactly. That can lead to arthritis much earlier in life. And we mentioned previous joint trauma fractures, dislocations, prolonged high-impact sports can also contribute.
Any difference between men and women?
Actually, yes. Studies show females tend to be more prone to developing hip arthritis than males. The reasons aren't perfectly clear, but it's a consistent finding.
Interesting. Okay, let's talk symptoms. We mentioned pain and stiffness, but can you describe the typical pain experience a bit more? Where is it usually felt?
The classic pattern is pain that gets worse with weight-bearing activities. Things like walking, standing for long periods, and especially climbing stairs often aggravate it.
Stairs are often a big one, I hear.
Very common trigger. People also often report stiffness, especially first thing in the morning or after sitting for a while, and just a general feeling of tightness in the hip.
And location, is it always felt right in the hip?
Most commonly, the pain is felt deep in the groin area. That's really classic for hip joint pain.
Okay, the groin.
But, and this is important, it can radiate. It can go to the buttock, down the front, or side of the thigh. And sometimes, quite confusingly, it refers pain primarily to the knee.
So knee pain could actually be coming from the hip.
Absolutely. It's something doctors always consider. If someone has knee pain, but their knee exam and x-rays look okay, the next step is often to check the hip.
What about pain more on the outside of the hip, like on the bony part?
That's usually not arthritis inside the joint. Pain right on the side is more often things like bursitis, inflammation of the bursa there, or maybe tendon issues, different problem.
And buttock pain.
But buttock pain can come from the hip, but very often it actually originates from the lower back. Things like sciatica or spinal stenosis, so sorting out the true source is key.
Right. Any other sensations people report?
Sometimes people describe a feeling of the hip locking or catching momentarily during movement, like it just gets stuck for a second.
Okay. It really sounds like a doctor needs to do a careful physical exam to piece this together. What would they look for?
Definitely. During the exam, we assess the hip's range of motion very carefully, both active when you move your own leg and passive when the doctor moves it for you.
And less motion usually means more severe arthritis.
Generally, yes. Decreased range of motion correlates pretty well with severity. We also check for pain when moving the hip through different arcs, especially rotation. We feel for tenderness around the joint, sometimes warmth or swelling, though swelling isn't as obvious in the hip as in, say, the knee.
Do they listen for anything?
Yes, or rather, feel for it.
Right.
While moving the hip, we might detect crepitus.
Crepitus.
That's a grinding, crackling, or grating sensation. It happens when those rough arthritic joint surfaces rub against each other.
Not pleasant sounding.
Not pleasant feeling either. We also look at how the person walks a limp, favoring the good side is very common. And sometimes the affected leg might even appear slightly shorter due to cartilage loss and muscle contractures.
Wow. Okay. So the exam gives lots of clues. But you mentioned x-rays are key for diagnosis. What exactly do they show?
X-rays are really the gold standard imaging for hip arthritis. They clearly show that joint space narrowing we talked about. Hmm. They also show the osteophytes, the bone spurs. Huh. They can reveal those subchondral cysts, the little pockets in the bone, and the subchondral sclerosis, that hardening of the bone beneath the cartilage. All these signs together paint the picture of arthritis.
And just to reiterate, the cartilage itself isn't really visible, right? The space is the proxy.
Correct. You infer the cartilage loss from the decreased space between the femoral head, the ball, and the acetabulum, the socket.
And do they usually x-ray both hips?
Yes. It's standard practice to get images of both hips for comparison, even if symptoms are only on one side. And repeat x-rays over time help track progression.
Okay. So let's say someone gets the diagnosis mild or moderate hip arthritis, maybe. What happens next? What are the treatment options?
For those earlier stages, the focus is almost always on non-operative treatments first. The goal is symptom management, reduce pain, improve function, slow things down if possible.
Makes sense. What kind of non-surgical things are we talking about?
Physical therapy is huge. Strengthening the muscles around the hip, the glutes, the quads, the core provides better support for the joint, which can really help with pain and stability.
So building up the support system.
Exactly. Then there are medications. NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen, can help with both pain and inflammation. They come in pills or topical creams and gels. Using assistive devices can make a big difference too. A cane held in the hand opposite the painful hip, or sometimes a walker, can take significant load off the joint.
Reduces the stress.
Right. Weight loss, if applicable, is also really important for the same reason, less load on the joint. And then there's activity modification.
Meaning just avoiding things that hurt?
Pretty much. Learning to avoid or adapt activities that consistently flare up the pain. Maybe swapping high-impact exercise for swimming or cycling. It's about working with the hip's limitations.
Okay, that all sounds like managing the situation. What about injections? Are those common?
Yes, injections directly into the hip joint are another non-operative tool. Cortisone injections are probably the most common.
Steroids, right?
Yep. A strong anti-inflammatory injected right into the joint space can give pretty significant, though usually temporary, pain relief. You can typically get them every 3-4 months or so if needed.
And any other types of injections?
There's also viscosupplementation. That's injecting hyaluronic acid, sort of an artificial joint fluid, into the hip. The idea is to provide extra lubrication and cushioning. Results are a bit more variable than cortisone, but it's an option for some.
Okay, so a fair number of non-surgical approaches to try. But what if those stop working or the arthritis gets severe and really impacts daily life? When does surgery enter the picture?
Surgery is generally considered when those non-operative treatments just aren't cutting it anymore. The pain is persistent, function is significantly limited, and quality of life is really suffering. And of course, the person needs to be healthy enough for surgery.
Are there different surgical options?
For a very small group with specific contained problems, sometimes hip arthroscopy, a scope procedure, might be possible. But for the vast majority with significant hip arthritis needing surgery, the go-to procedure is total hip replacement.
Total hip replacement or total hip arthroplasty, that sounds major. What does it involve?
It is a major surgery, but it's also one of the most successful operations in all of medicine. Essentially, the surgeon removes the damaged ball and socket the femoral head and the acetabulum lining and replaces them with artificial components, usually made of metal, plastic, or ceramic.
A whole new joint surface.
Pretty much. And the results in terms of pain relief and restoring function can be dramatic, really life-changing for many people.
But I imagine it's not without risks. And the implants don't last forever.
That's absolutely correct. There are surgical risks like infection, blood clots, dislocation, nerve injury, though the rates are relatively low. And yes, the artificial joint components can wear out over time or potentially loosen.
How long do they typically last?
Modern hip replacements are very durable. It's not uncommon for them to last 20 years, maybe even longer, especially if the person isn't doing constant high-impact activities.
And if it does wear out, can it be redone?
Yes. A revision surgery is possible where they replace the worn out components. However, revision hip replacement is generally a more complex operation than the first one.
Harder the second time around.
Often, yes. Which is why surgeons are sometimes hesitant to do a primary hip replacement in very young, active individuals because they'll likely need one or more revisions in their lifetime. Generally, good candidates are often considered to be 65 or older, though that's not a strict rule.
We have been talking about hip arthritis based on information from the free and peer-reviewed patient education website, OrthoEducation, at www.orthoeducation.com. So just to kind of wrap things up here, what's the main takeaway for listeners about hip arthritis?
I think the key is understanding that hip arthritis is fundamentally about cartilage wear leading to pain, stiffness, and trouble moving. It can happen from aging, injury, or conditions like OA and RA.
Right.
Diagnosis involves a good exam and x-rays looking for that joint space narrowing and other signs. And treatment really runs a spectrum.
From lifestyle changes.
Exactly. Physical therapy, managing weight, modifying activities, maybe medications or injections, all the way up to surgery like hip replacement if needed. The good news is that with the right management plan, many people find significant relief and maintain a good quality of life.
That's encouraging. It really highlights how understanding the mechanics helps in finding solutions.
It really does. Being informed helps you work with your doctor to find the best path forward for your specific situation.
We have just discussed hip arthritis based on information from the free, easy-to-understand patient education website, OrthoEducation, available at www.orthoeducation.com. Please remember, this podcast is for general educational purposes only. If you're dealing with an injury or have concerns about your health, be sure to consult a trained healthcare professional.
And maybe just a final thought, thinking about how our joints work, like the hip, can make us more mindful about protecting them throughout life, you know?
Yeah.
Thinking about posture, exercise, weight, it all connects to long-term joint health.